One question you put on here, Justin, that I thought was very culturally embedded and centered. It says, what would you all say to the Black women who may, in some ways, feel unprotected by their own Black sisters, as in the days of the Manu, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, or Minu,
The Mino, I believe, yes.
Mino tribe of Dahomey, Benin, Africa. Dahomey, Benin, Africa, should Black women incorporate self-defense and protect themselves? What's your thoughts about that, Stacey?
I think this is something that the short answer is yes. I think that we do this, right? We incorporate self-defense in various ways. Some of them are healthy ways, some of them are not so healthy. Some of them I alluded to earlier, like posturing, right? That is a sort of self-defense. Or even aggression is a sort of self-defense. But certainly, by and large, Black women of the diaspora, we are warriors. We've always protected ourselves. I mean, it makes me think of Yaa Asantewaa, right? This famous warrior. And if you look back at history, Black women have been vital in so many slave rebellions and so many social movements. So we do protect ourselves. I think the other part of the question, as far as what would we say to Black women who may in some ways feel unprotected by their own Black, by our Black sisters, is, you know, we have to have dialogue. We have to be able to say, I need this from you and I'm not getting it. I need this from you and here's how it would look like. I know in corporate spaces and in the space where I work, I seek out Black women and I say, this is what I'm hearing, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I think we should do, and this is when I think we should do it, right? We need to form coalitions. We need to have code because everybody has codes. All groups have codes by which they live, whether they're spoken or unspoken, whether everyone agrees or not. And we need to be mindful of what those codes look like. You know, when we heard, is it Issa Rae say, like, I'm, or when we heard, I'm rooting for everybody Black, that resonates,
Yes, indeed.
right? And that is a huge statement. So that if I'm in a circle of Black women and I let them know that that's the case, that changes. It changes the narrative, this whole narrative about women being catty, Black women being against one another. You know, I always say in any given moment, what is it that you can proclaim to be true? So that when I'm in spaces with Black women, I let them know I support you, I see you, I care about you, I'm here for you. And I think those things are important. We have to be clear about where we stand in terms of supporting and protecting one another. I also don't adhere to, I've always had difficulties with notions of deservedness. Abasi, you and I have talked a little bit about my moving away from Christianity because I think that this notion of deservedness is very centered in Christianity. And so I don't know what people deserve. I know what should happen. I know that Black women in circles of other Black women should protect and support one another and should care for one another. And that's what I'm doing. So that it doesn't become a matter of what you're bringing and what you deserve. It's about this is the nature of how we deal with one another.
I wonder at the root of any cultural bickering or animus of Black women against Black women has to do with the fact that within the larger society, they see themselves as obsolete. They see themselves as being disposable. So if I'm disposable, so therefore necessarily there's no need to protect you as a Black woman because I don't see any value in Black women generally. So why would I stick my neck on the line for somebody who's disposable? What's your thoughts about that?
I could see that being the case. That makes sense. And I think that that functions among many groups, right? I think there is a part of what I want to call assimilative culture, which is that in any given space, in society, wherever you exist, you look at the dynamics that's going on and you decide, who do I want to be? Do I want to be? Do I want to be someone who's making the decisions, or do I want to be a bystander? And so that when a lot of the women that were on some of these posts talking about Megan Thee Stallion and what happened to her, there is this notion of let me assimilate to what's happening here, right? So that I'm not identified with her. So there's not wanting to align yourself with the victim or with the person who is undeserved of protection or anything else. I'm going to align myself with these people. So I have to do that. And if what they're doing is demeaning her and not honoring her experience and saying that she deserved it or she caused it, then that's what I'm going to do to make sure that I'm not the one who's othered.
Wow. I think that's really deep. I think you hit the nail on top of the head. And to speak to the other question, I think that it's important too for Black women to incorporate self-defense and protect themselves to the extent that they can have their own autonomy and they're not necessarily unhealthy way contingent or codependent on Black men being there all the time, because there's times where Black men may not be around. So to what extent can you feel fortified and strengthened and empowered within your own self, kind of like Dodor Mlaje in the Black Panther movie, but that was contingent upon, I think, the real tribe that is listed within the question, the Dahomey tribe, that was built upon that. So this notion that Black women are self-sustaining and can be, I think that's is a bevy of information in history that suggests that that's true. But also Black men should be in place for when she cannot protect herself. And I think that gives a good amount of balance to the situation. She can protect herself if need be, whether that's mace, whether that's a firearm, whether that's self-protection, self-defense classes, or whether that's having a Black man on her side to protect her. I think the combination of both would be most ideal. And also, I think there's room to have a conversation about the intersectionality of, yes, I'm being abused by my Black spouse, but I don't want my Black spouse to be now potentially put in harm's way because of law enforcement and their abuse of Black men. And what do you think about that?
That is a great point. I'll tell you, my relationship, I had a past relationship with my son's father, and I always said to him, I will never call the police on you. And just as I'm saying this, it kind of reminds me of some commentary around what Will said, which is like, you know, there's no divorce happening. So when you declare things like that, you then put yourself in a certain predicament, right? Because someone, I will never call the cops on you. Essentially, it does leave you vulnerable in a certain way. So that's a good point. And I have to say, I'm of two minds with that. It's a difficult position to be in. But what I will say is this, that was many years ago that I said that. And from then till now, like, I definitely, let's just say I have armed myself so that I am protected, so that even if I didn't call the police, I know how to put myself in a situation where I'm protecting myself, my son, my home in a way that is clear to anyone who enters our space. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Appreciate the insight on that. Is there another question you want to leave with, Justin?
Yeah, I just want to thank you both for covering that. That was very, very insightful. And just to add on to that, I do think that there are women who are not invested in Black women, our women not being invested in protecting other Black women because of the lack of value that they see within themselves as being Black women, and as well. I believe Sister Stacy alluded to that as well in her statement. I have to align myself with another group, another marginalized group. I have to align myself with another organization, so I don't have to deal with the trauma that is associated with being Black in America, particularly being a Black woman in America. And I'm not speaking as a Black woman. I'm a Black male, but I do believe that there's a pocket of women who do feel that way, who may have those thoughts and those feelings, and they have to sort of deal with that in a particular way that sort of just, you know, is if it veers away from the trauma, specific to women, let me not be so specific in saying that this is all of us. We do this often. We don't want to be associated with being Black because there's trauma involved. We don't want to be associated with healthy, sustainable Black relationships because we've seen the dysfunction in our relationships. We've seen dysfunction in our families. So we're not looking to have to procreate and have Black children, raise them in a household that could be, you know, anything that's reminiscent of what we endured as children in our upbringing, in our Black experiences collectively. So yeah, I just wanted to share that you guys you definitely hit the nail on the head, especially you, Stacey, with your commentary. I appreciate that. But I wanted to switch gears a little bit because we were getting into just overall conversation flow, getting into respectability politics, and that's the reason that I had it listed, because is there do you guys feel that there is a way for us to be in society? Are we who we are because we're viewing ourselves through an African-centered lens, or the majority of us are viewing ourselves through another lens that is not helpful and not beneficial to us being Black and African people in America? What do you see all of this and everything that we've discussed? Just kind of bring it on home a little bit. Abasi, I'm gonna start with you first, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Far as respectability politics, I would say the crux of such a paradigm is one that is religious, one that's dogmatic, religiously mm-hmm. dogmatic, in the sense that it's moralistic, it's pious, it's holier than thou. And so when you don't adhere or comply to the holier than thou set of rules or the Ten Commandments, then necessarily you are somebody who is rendered hedonistic. You're chasing pleasure. You're someone who is a harlot. You're doing everything that's the Antichrist, if you will. And so there's no room for being human. There's no room for fallibility, because you're automatically demonized as being sinful, being out of the will of Christ or out of the will of God. And because of that, there's a low level of pliancy, meaning flexibility beyond adherence. Either you do or you don't. And if you don't, then that necessarily centers you to being satanic. You know, so it's almost like this hypnotic type of hypnosis where you have to do everything that's within the center of religiosity. And if you don't, you fall outside the lines of somebody that's worthwhile. And I even had a discourse on my page with a sister who felt as though there should be a caste system of respectability. Yes, Megan should have been respected, but juxtaposed to the first lady of a church, she shouldn't be respected as much as her because of status and symbolism and positionality sociologically. So it necessarily, if one is a stripper, then she shouldn't be respected on the same level as the first lady. And that gets into bourgeoisie politics, and you know, which is no different from Eurocentric politics in terms of being bougie. You know, so if we just take, you don't want to get in a position where you're kind of like the talented tenth and you're Black facing classism, to where, yeah, when you look like this or when you fit the motif, then you're a cutout and you fit into the party. And if you don't, we have to alienate you, ostracize you, because you haven't complied to moralistic values that are often centered in a religious framework. And for me personally, being Pan-African and being diunital, I'm always looking in terms of what's optimal, what's healthy, what's beneficial, what's balanced. And so ideally, of course, I wouldn't want our Black men or Black women hypersexualized, in a sense that they're monetized, their sex and their imagery is monetized in such a way to make white dollars. However, I'm not in position to where I'm so pious that I'm going to look down on them in a condescending fashion and say, hey, because your life doesn't mirror the life that I feel fits inside an Afrocentric framework, I'm not going to be contradictory and ironically exude very religious dogmatic principles and saying, because you don't fit this motif, then we must necessarily say incendiary things about you and make you feel less than, and you deserve less respect. And so I just can't co-sign that. I treat a person as you would want them to be in the hopes that they become that person. And it's about how you want to be treated in return. It's not about their status and their position in life, because then you get into that realm of just moralistic politics, and I'm not okay with that. I think that's very unhealthy.
Yes, I'm totally in agreement with that. I was like, I always say I have two issues with respect to politics. One, it's built on fallacy, right? We know that church ladies get raped. You know, women who walk around scantily clad get raped. So we know that some of this stuff is built on a falsehood of thinking if you appear this way, you'll be treated this way. And especially as it pertains to race, right? It's like, if you're a brother from the hood and you're doing things that seem a little shady and you're stopped by the police and you're a brother who is a Harvard graduate and you're looking at birds in Central Park, both those things can play out the same way. They can both end in your death. So we know, you know, respectability politics for me don't work because of that. The other part of that is that when we center too much on trying to monitor and govern and police other people's behavior, we take away this ability for people to be authentic, right? I don't know who Meg Thee Stallion is. I don't know who her authentic self is, or the same thing with Beyonce, right? Mm-hmm. So here are two artists, different type of artists, but the body stuff is still there, right? This way of being over sexualized and dressed a certain way. And I don't know who these women are authentically, but if this is who they are authentically, that's what I want them to be. And my respect for them, my advocacy for them doesn't change based on that.
All right. I've always seen or viewed respectability politics as a class issue. There's a group within our community who feel as if we change our status, if we change our socioeconomic status, if we change our behaviors, if we wear different suits, we put on a different hat. We showcase, though, this is a different group of blacks. We are the blacks. It's like the talented 10th. We are the blacks that are deserving of respect and upward mobility. We are deserving of the property, of the materials and the things that are associated with being like a white person in America, and the things that are the luxuries that are afforded to them often. We would receive those very same things if we would just be different. And I've never subscribed to that. It was part of the reason why I wasn't too keen on being a part of certain organizations when I was on the university level. I eventually joined an organization, but my thinking wasn't to acquiesce and to, you know, become involved in the social, political, and economic spaces and have the luxuries that are afforded to other people who don't look like me because I choose to be different and dress different all of a sudden. Like, me putting on a suit is not going to change that. Like, I would tell people all the time, like, listen, I was ignorant in making the statement. It was like, yo, I'm always going to be a real N-word. Like, I tell people, they're like, yo, I'm not going to change. I'm no suit if I don't really have to. If I'm not going nowhere that requires me to wear a suit, if it's not a part of the dress code, I'm not putting on tight pants. Like, why are my jeans so tight? I'm too big for this. I'm taking this mess off. Like, like, no, I'm not doing any of that. I'm not trying to be preppy. I'm not trying to be so well polished of black. I already talk a certain way, so why would I even try to, you know? I'm not here to put on a front. I'm not going to do that just so I can be amongst people who, once I'm in those spaces, I'm still black and I still have to fight. So I put on this suit and I'm gonna sweat it out because I'm about to go in here and fight for a position that I naturally should deserve because of my intellect that they should see but don't. I'm more than qualified for this job and this position anyway. Like, it didn't, nothing would change. Like, when I leave here, I have to fight you I have to fight the system. I have to fight to protect my sanity with this image of what people think of me. And then when I go into the world, I have to fight some more. I have to fight my own people. I could get stopped by the police in any moment. And it's always a constant pressure to try to have to be a black man and try to have to prove oneself. And I can only imagine like just walking into the shoes of a black woman, all the things that she would have to do to prove herself. Like, because if she doesn't speak up, even it's almost like a lose-lose. Even if she doesn't speak up, she's angry. If she doesn't speak up and doesn't say anything because she wants to protect her sanity, she gets left out of the conversation. She's forgotten. Like women in entertainment, just bringing it back to the Meg situation, just, you know, our culture, hip-hop culture. If I say something intelligent, I get ignored. If I show my body, that's when people pay attention to me. And now I'm given all of these nominations to be awarded at these functions. I'm a fashion icon all of a sudden because I show my body and I wear out certain outfits that just show my frame. And you don't really get to, you know, people know that I'm an intelligent person, but they don't. The fact that Megan is a school student and going for her education, her master's, is that's important. That's very important. The fact that other women in our culture are doing great things outside of just making music and being fashionable and showing their physical features, those things should be highlighted just as much. So in terms of respectability politics, there's really nothing. It just feels like a lose-lose to me. And that's why I never subscribe to that type of thinking. And I don't know. If you guys have any thoughts on that, anything that I've said may have been, you know.
Yeah, I think respectability politics is a very divisive measure, and like I said, I think it creates an unnecessary hierarchy of classism. As mm-hmm. I said before, that's just blackface. Eurocentric classism and bourgeoisie, being bougie, like you said, the talented tenth. And so I think by and large, it's not something that's going to be effective and beneficial for us. And I think it's something we should quickly jettison. But all we can do is try to be culture changers and trying to eliminate it the best of our abilities. We're coming down to a little bit less than 30 minutes. We have an hour and 33. So I want to try to fit in maybe two more questions. And I think that'll be it. We'll have to cut out some of the meat on some of this. But I think this mm-hmm. is a great question that you posed, Stacey. It says, as a community, why are we able to accept the passive approach to misogyny while asserting Black Lives Matter? Is that something that you want to go out on a limb since it's your question to answer first? Or is that something you would like one of us to respond to first?
I would love one of you to respond to it. It's something that I have been kind of mulling over in my mind. And I know the easy answer for me would be to say that we are, we're mimicking, you know, Eurocentric culture, but sometimes I wonder, is there more happening? Mm. And so I think this would be great.
Yeah, I think it can be scaled out from a micro level to a meso and macro level. On a micro level, I think we've learned in a very implicit and tacit way that misogyny is rewarding. There's rewards to being misogynistic, and we're people. Mm-hmm. who are driven by outcomes, by and large, and desires. And the things that create our desires and the potential outcomes we experience, many of the times, are the rewards that this societal system produces for you. You know, so I'm misogynistic in my lyrics because the label compensates me for doing so. The record sales compensates me for doing so. So necessarily mm-hmm. it's to my benefit to be a misogynist because I'm being incentivized to do so. I'm being incentivized to be destructive, to be divisive. And these are things that are not necessarily evaluated and processed as we try to understand some of the most enigmatic things of our society. What would create the rush or the excitement for being misogynistic through records that have implications, that has impact, that has influence? Whenever you're sending lyrics out into the universe, they're going to reverberate and produce behaviors and pathologies centered around male and female interaction and how men think it's okay to now marginalize Black women because the lyrics and rap records. In a subconscious way, this really resonates. So I would say we accept the passive approach to misogyny because there's no great reward in being protectors of Black women, because a lot of times, me for a prime example, if you go to my post that I had on Megan Thee Stallion and just women in general, a lot of Black men and Black women were chiming in calling me, to use their words, I'm a save a hoe or I'm a simp, because I'm saying these things in exchange to get some type of compensation. And one Black one, and this offended me the most, that one Black woman was brazen enough to say, this brother is trying to get some low-cost cookies. You know, so you know what that's a euphemism for. You know, so to suggest that the only way that I would participate in the protection of Black women is to use it as a deceptive mechanism to now render a Black woman powerless to where she feels like she has to reward me with what's between her legs. You know, so, you know, commentary such as this is very destructive, and it really reads into a lot of the things that need to be processed for us as a community.
Right. And I would add on to that is, you know, there is somewhat of a passive approach from what I've seen and things that I've witnessed. I can understand how someone would get the sense that Black men's lives matter more in the face of police brutality, in the face of injustices, economic inequality, and all of the issues. But why someone only that Black Lives Matter means only Black men's life matters. When we talk about when we discuss the things that happen to our sisters in similar capacities, when we start talking about Breonna Taylor and the multitude of other women who've had to endure these same injustices, and especially within our own community, it feels there's a weird feeling. I can't really put it in the right words, but there is a feeling and it is a not so good energy, because we should be paying more attention. We should be showing a bit more appreciation. We should be as heavily invested in finding out, you know, what's happening to our people, all of our people, not just Black men, whenever it happens to us. George Floyd's death shouldn't be at the front of the movement alone. It should include everyone. So, like, his name being brought up, even in the media, the white European owned media, I think that is indeed divisive as well, because we want to march and fight for every one of us, and I can understand how our sisters are left out of the conversation. I do see that as divisive. I think we do need liberation. We need justice. We need all of these things, but we also need to open up and pay attention. We need to be more assertive in our investigations, in our understanding of things and the mechanics of how those things work, in particular, over and over and over again. And the people who should be remembered and who should be serviced at a much higher capacity are not left and forgotten. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think you brought forth a lot of impactful information that hopefully our listeners will hold on to and use this as a tool to make better decisions in terms of the interactions between Black men and Black women moving forward. I know we have 20 minutes left. So, Stacey, I'm going to give you the opportunity. If you're looking at the outline I sent you, I think we have about two questions we didn't get to. And I just want to give you the option of deciding which question is more important, because they're your questions. The one I'm looking at is, do you believe that it is the role, responsibility, or obligation of Black men to protect Black women? And if so, in a broad sense, what does that mean and look like? And are some Black women example? Or if so, why? The other one is where you were including Will and Jada's situation. So which one of those questions do you think you want to kind of end this with?
I think the first one we talked about, you know, as we went through some of the other questions. So then I would say, you know, here we have this incident that occurred while we were all heavily engaged in discussing Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith entanglement, quote unquote, yeah. Right? And by and large, what I saw unfolding on social media was this sort of like outcry of empathy for Will, like, oh man, poor Will, man, look, you know, this hit him hard, that sort of thing. And then we have this incident where Meg Thee Stallion is shot at. And we see the complete opposite, like a large lack of empathy and sympathy and concern. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the chasm there has to do with gender politics. And in a larger contextual sense, we've grown accustomed to the normalization of the abuse of Black women. So it becomes something to kind of drift under the radar because, well, it's another Black woman got shot, another Black woman got harmed or hurt or injured or maimed in some type of way. What's next? Because we see it. It's almost invariable, endless in the sense of its existence. But then when we see a celebrity that we've grown to love over the years and he seems to be hurt or damaged in some type of way, although he has all these amenities, and I'm not suggesting that amenities and material things should cover up for your internal pain, but he has a life that's structured in such a way that he can make good on some of the things that he has going on in his personal life. And if he needs to get a therapist, he can get access to a therapist. Or if he has issues with this, that, and the third, he has the resources at his disposal, where Black women don't nearly have the same amount of resources in terms of just money or people they can turn to. It seems that we put a higher premium on just celebrities in general, as opposed to the struggles and the plights of Black women. And I think that's something that we have to really sit down with ourselves in certain social circles and say, what is the priority? What's important here? And what and see the true value that Black women have offered historically and even presently to this day, and see them as valuable parts of our existence that have to be maintained and have to be fortified in such a way that if we lose our women, then we lose our nation, because they are literally the birth, the process. They are the womb in which our children are born out of. They birth our children. So if we don't have women, we don't have existence until we tie Black womanhood and liveliness with physical and metaphysical existence, then there will be no more Black nation. And in my estimation, we have to see it as such.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I'm going to add something real quick. Dustin, I want to hear from you. Because the other part I would add to that, we also have to allow Black women to narrate our own experiences. Because I think in both of these situations, right, there was a lot of narratives that we were kind of creating for Will Smith. We already know, right, that he said, it doesn't matter what she does, I'm not leaving her. We also have heard countless rumors of the arrangement that they've had. They've also talked about it, right? So we know the facts of that. But when it came to Meg Thee Stallion's situation, and she talked about what the experience is like for her, we didn't take her at her word. And so we definitely have to also allow Black women to define our own experiences and have that be held for truth.
Stacey, I want to say real quickly, you know, you did a great job with that breakdown, because a lot of times we do question the veracity of Black women's narratives and their truths that they tell. Get to the closing regards in terms of the statements of everything that we discussed, and just like a quick breakdown or just a closing statements from everybody, because we're right on that 2-hour line. So Stacey, I'll let you have your closing remarks and just your general thoughts about the conversation.
Yeah, sure. I want to thank you both for having me. I think the conversation was great. I think there are a lot of pearls here, pearls of wisdom that the community should definitely take in and act upon. I started off talking about history, so I want to kind of end there and say, you know, the way that I think about things is that we are all very deeply wounded by the history of slavery, by the dynamics, the culture, and the legacy of slavery, and also the current injustices. And the same way that we show up for the fight against all of these things, we also need to show up for the healing. So we all need to do our healing. We are all gatekeepers of our community. We are all responsible for one another. And so we need to start having our actions reflect that.
Right. And I would like to say in closing that hopefully our listeners out there can take this discourse as a prescriptive measure for trying to rectify a lot of the historical wounds that we have, as you spoke to, Stacey, transgenerationally, and use this as an opportunity to start to embark upon conversations that will allow us to come to resolutions and allow us to come to outcomes that will allow us to ingratiate each other more without the gender politics, without feeling like we have to marginalize Black women, and coming up with reasons to substantiate why we feel like Black women should be attacked and Black women should be denigrated. And I put this responsibility on Black men and on Black women for us to protect Black women and to also protect Black men, protect each other. And Ubuntu, we are, I am because we are, and because we are, I am, you know, just keeping that forefront. Just anything you want to say before we close out?
Yes, I just want to thank both of you for, Stacey, to you for joining our podcast. Early stages, we're still getting things together, but this is beautiful. I truly enjoy the conversation, and I enjoyed your commentary most definitely. And you're absolutely right, Obasi. We do have to just do better in protecting one another. And so, to anyone that's out there listening, you know, listen with your heart and mind in the right place. And listen to understand, that we are in a very critical state as a people, and so that's why, you know, these type of platforms are necessary. We're just one of many platforms, one of many opportunities for people to come and be educated. Our people, all walks of life, all different types of us, we're so diverse, but we're able to come to a space and be educated on, you know, how we should, you know, love one another, respect one another, protect one another, and, you know, just get some insight of lens, a Pan-African perspective on how we can be better for one another, better people. And so, yeah, this is really great. This is really, really great. I like the chemistry, you know, right. Even through the technical difficulties we're talking about, and this has been a very productive podcast. I love it.
Exactly.
Thanks again for having me.
You're very welcome.
No problem. And lastly, I'll just say thank you for all our supporters out there who listen to us as we periodically post new episodes. And hopefully we can have Stacey back on at a later date for another topic. And I just want to say Ashe and Hotep, and thank you. This black medicine, everything black trust, everything black love, everything. Praise Black Jesus, play Black Moses, give them flowers while they still give Black roses.
Hotep, this is Obasi. I want to thank you all for listening to our part one of episode 4, Misogyny of Black Women Protected. I bring to you part 2. I hope you enjoy. Continue to listen. Continue to support. Ashe.